Welcome to Your Health IQ, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of health and wellness. I'm your host, Pam Barnes.
And I'm Jay, co-navigating with Pam during our discussions. Together, we're PB&J, relaying information about a wide range of health-related topics we think might be of interest to our listeners.
We're tackling the big questions and uncovering the science and stories that matter most to your health but aren't making the headlines. Welcome, listeners. Thanks again for joining PB&J as we talk today about makeup and the makeup industry, as well as what makeup is made of, as well as the impact that it has on young girls, even toddlers. You know, in recent years, we've seen this worrying trend of very young girls, even toddlers, starting to wear makeup and use beauty products. So today we want to have a conversation about the early impacts of children using makeup in their development as well as their self-image. Now, we're not here, neither Jay nor I, are here to tell any parent what they should or shouldn't do with their kids. You know, every family has to make their own choices based on their values. But we hope this podcast will help raise some awareness around the issues that prompt some thoughtful discussion. There's no easy answer, but an informed conversation is a good place to start. So Jay, let's just kind of dive in right now. Children's sense of beauty. What is beauty? You know, that's a tough one. Of course, it's largely subjective. You know, one person's idea of beauty may be very different than another's. But our perceptions are also shaped by our culture as well as our society that we live in.
And our family too, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. You know, factors like gender and ethnicity and social class influence the ideals of beauty. And we see it all the time on social media. And so today we're going to kind of look and go internal into the young age and find out young children are having this ability, having this challenge to maneuver through the complexity of social media and the things that they're seeing in advertising. Young children have a more natural, you know, when they're born, nobody says you're ugly or you're cute, or they don't come out knowing whether they're ugly or cute. They just know they exist, right? Nobody says you're ugly or you're cute until they start developing. It's like, oh, you're a cute little baby, you know, or you're a cute little girl, or you're a cute little boy. You know?
Or if they think that, maybe they just don't say it.
right. They don't say it. You're absolutely right.
Boy, you're ugly.
Oh, you're ugly. And I told Jay this before. I said, you know, I've never seen an ugly baby.
And I said, yes, I have.
And Jay admitted that she had. And I was like, okay, I had never seen one. So young children have this innate sense of beauty that's not bound by, you know, social conventional norms or exposure. But today, even young children are exposed to this social media and media images that promote this narrow, like unrealistic ideal of what is attractive. You know, this can affect, of course, their self-esteem, just like it affects for older people. It affects their, you know, you see this beautiful woman on television or in social media, or you see all these, I love this, all these makeup videos that you'll see on TikTok or YouTube, and they're shaping and molding the way we see beauty using makeup and all these products on our face and highlighting our eyes and cheekbones and hiding wrinkles and, oh man, so much stuff. So this, for children, you know, this affects their self-esteem, and they become overly focused on appearance from the outside, rather than being nurtured for their abilities and their inner being, you know, their inner self. And like I said, we're not here to tell parents what to do and what not to do, but there are some psychological effects that impact very young girls, and I'm saying girls because there hasn't been too much information done on boys, because I think there's more young girls that are wearing makeup than there are young boys. But, you know, wearing makeup and trying to emphasize their looks. So it let's go through it. It promotes an external focus on looks over inner character and abilities. It sets up impossible high standards of beauty for girls that they feel like they must live up to. You know, if they don't have the long nails with the, you know, colorful long nails, then of course you can go into any toy store or any, you know, Five Below. You can go into Target and there's a section just for girls, and it's in the toy section, and you can get fingernail polish, and you can get lipstick, and this is all supposedly for girls, you know. And then it causes body image issues, you know, looking at TikTok videos, and you see a girl like entering into a beauty pageant, and she's got on the makeup, her hair is done, she's got on the long gown, she's, you know, she's exhibiting her talents, you know, for these pageants, and it's just not a good thing for young children, because it creates a dependence on makeup specifically to feel confident rather than knowing their self-worth.
And I would say, Pam, I know you remember this, like I remember this, is even when teenage girls specifically, and probably preteens, the magazines, and I don't know if 17 magazine is still out there.
Yes, but it there, is, believe it or not.
Yeah, so magazines also help to fuel the fire, I think, with what beauty should be and what makeup you should wear, and then the so-called influencers on social media. Just like you said, the ones that have these tutorials on how to highlight your cheekbones or whatever they're doing.
Make your eyes look brighter, bigger.
Right. The false eyelashes and the
absolutely.
This and the that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And of course, we know that the industry itself, the makeup industry, you know, has gone from over the years, over the decades, it's gone from women to children, because they know that if they can catch them early. I think it all started out with the Barbie doll, honestly.
All the Barbie doll lines and the American Girl dolls,
yes.
And
yes.
Any of those dolls that had these crazy looks and crazy body things, you know, a waste of, if you think about a Barbie doll, when you and I were young, what they looked like, you know, a waist of 20 and a bust of 40 and hips of, you know, whatever. It's like, who really has that?
Long legs,
right.
And these feet that didn't lay flat, they always had, you know, they were
high heels.
For the heels.
Yes, because even your slippers were high-heeled slippers, right?
Right. Exactly. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I guess I never fit in the mold of Barbie, because my slippers are, you know, really just flat shoes, and I prefer that.
I use socks, by the way.
and socks, for sure. So there was an article that was written. It was actually the person who did this. It was a subcommittee. Actually, what it was, let me go back. There was a testimony that was done by the chief science officer, Mitch Christine. He's a PhD, and he did it before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And he addressed the issue of age in which children begin to use social media and the concerns that science has brought up, that they're in the impact on it. So there's a developmental neuroscience that revealed, and this is his quote, developmental neurosciences have revealed there are two highly critical periods in adaptive neural development. One of these is the first year of life, and the second begins at the onset of puberty, which is between the ages of 10 and 25 years. You know, during this period, he was saying that, you know, it's highly relevant that the number of access to these devices, you know, to social media devices, and the unrestricted and unsupervised use of social media on these platforms has had a tremendous psychological effect on these children. Tend to crave the rewards of visibility and attention and positive feedback from their peers. And Jay, you and I know this, is that kids go to school, and those who don't wear uniforms, because I know some schools now have converted over to uniforms, but it's like, what tennis shoes do you have? Or what, you know, if you don't have the best tennis shoes, or what's trending on, you know, on social media, then, you know, like, you're old school. You know, you don't have it like that, or you're poor. But here it is, poor people will go and spend $350 on a pair of shoes as opposed to, you know, putting
food.
That money away in savings or whatever.
And so, Pam, I would say, too, because you and I went through, I think, a similar thing back when social media did not exist. And so when you and I were younger, and my memory is still pretty vivid for my high school years and my elementary school years, is even back then when there were certain fads or certain brands of clothing or shoes, if you didn't have that, you were not necessarily ostracized, but you were kind of like the outlier.
In the in crowd.
You weren't the cool person, right? You weren't in with the cliques. That everybody wanted to have, everybody wanted to belong, right? You don't want to be an outlier. You want to belong to something, to some kind of a group, right?
Some kind of a group, right?
And so with social media, I can't even imagine how much that has expanded or exploded.
Yes.
Because now it's not just us back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s.
Well, you had small groups.
I mean, it was just in-person stuff. But now it's social media, where everybody is, all these kids are on social media, I would think.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. It's like that craving now that these kids have for that attention and to feel accepted. And I think that you know, everyone wants to feel, and that's every human being needs a certain amount of feeling significant. And the social media has created this false sense of this is how you can become cool, or this is how you can be cool, or this is how people are more willing to accept you, and that's and but the psychological impact has been great. So he further talks about, you know, that in the brain regions involved in our ability to inhibit our behavior and resist temptation, which is, as we know, is the prefrontal cortex, do not fully develop in early adulthood, you know, between the ages of 10 and 15 years, right? And so the youth are kind of craving, the social attention, they are all gas pedals and no brakes. Nobody's putting any brakes on this, not even at home, you know, and that's when he talks about the unsupervised use of these devices and social media, you know. But how can we restrain these children when we're giving them, when these kids have access to all this information? They have access to every video, TikTok. You know, TikTok, people can stay, I know adults who can go on TikTok and hours can pass by. These TikTok videos are very short. So our brain is processing all this information, you know, like in flashes. There's no focus, no concentration. And you may find one that is interest of you, but hours have passed and you don't even realize what you have done, absolutely nothing other than look at somebody else's content. That's crazy. And what you could accomplish in those number of hours for yourself, if no more than helping yourself or reading a book or or doing something around the house is just like a waste. Or kids going outside and play for a couple of hours. How healthy is that?
And if, and I would say that if what they've been watching turns into something negative, then it's just reinforcing something that's not some, it's not good. It's not a value, right? If what they're watching is making them feel worse about themselves for all of that time that you're talking about, that's not value added for them, you know, being glued to a screen.
Not at all. Not at all. You know, the research also suggested that insufficient sleep is associated with the use of social of these social media and these devices. And this includes, that's included in poor school performance, you know, difficulties with attention. And there's so many kids now with ADHD and ADD that when you're constantly, continuously being fed this information, your attention, your ability to focus, and you will develop attention deficit disorder very easily. You know, stress. There's no way of, if these kids see something on TV or something on social media, and it gives them alarm or an uneasy feeling, you know, what does that do to the amount of stress? There's no way of regulating, you know, unless the kid runs out the room or drops the phone or, you know, goes talks to mom or something or parent. And, of course, the increased automobile accidents, you know, kids texting or looking at a video or, you know. So the neuroscientific research has demonstrated that any time that you have that much, your brain is inundated with that much attention on multiple, and it's not just one item, it's like multiple items. It's like you're programming the brain in order for it not to be able to focus or to have attention on one specific topic. And that's where that poor performance, school performance comes from. Because these kids are so accustomed to going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, that for them to concentrate and focus on one subject or one topic is very difficult, because the brain has not been able to develop, that prefrontal cortex has not been able to develop so that these kids can hold any attention for any period of time. So, you know, so there's this, the preoccupation with technology and social media. Science has found that it affects the size of the brain.
And Pam, so, let me ask you something. Just me asking you this. Would you not think that if a child who is spending the majority of their time watching TikTok videos or YouTube videos or some kind of entertaining videos or makeup application videos, I would think they're probably not placing first in their class for education.
Not at all.
I would think that if that time was devoted to studies, and if parents, for example, would say, hey, you know, hop off there and let's sit down and talk about some science things, or let's talk about some math things.
Yes, that's not right. Let's read a book.
Right.
You know, let's do something different. Let's get off of the screens and you know, all together. Yeah, and Jay, you know this, my grandkids are not allowed to look at anything, television, computers. Well, they have to use computers in school, but when they come home from school, they're not allowed to be on any screens or any computers, and they do very well in school.
Right.
They do very well in school.
Yeah.
And so we know that science has shown that, you know, these kids cannot be, you cannot use these devices as babysitters. You have to have that interaction with children. Children have to be, if you're a parent, you guide the child the way you think that that child should go. Now, if you think that child, and that's why I said, we're not here to tell parents what to do, what not to do. We're just trying to reveal to you the science behind it and the impact And so when I look at, you know, overall, and I'm going to kind of conclude my section on the psychological effects, but and Jay is going to pick up another topic. You know, here it is. There's a proposed legislation. They're trying to fix all these like algorithms and this inundation of AI having some sort of controls on the amount of information that the kids, you know, in China, good example, in China, they don't see the same things our kids see on social media. It's well controlled, you know, because of the fact that they don't want their children to have the same psychological impact that the American children are having or anyone else, any other child in the world. So even though because they are the developers of most of these social media platforms, they have a lot of restrictions and controls on their kids. And so the U.S. is now trying to do what they call passing the Kids Online Safety Act. And it's supposed to provide protection rights or protection for these kids, including, you know, social media and addictive features on social media platforms. But when you're talking about billions and billions of dollars that is being generated through the use of social media on these children and the impact that it's having, you know, even down to what they want for Christmas and, you know, what they just want on a regular basis, you have to say, well, is it possible to do that? And one of the, and it's kind of interesting, so they're also trying to mandate protections for marginalized and LGBTQ kids while retaining their ability to connect with others in their own support groups, you know, because then they're trying to make sure that these kids have some sort of protection as well from not being ostracized or being bullied online. So I think there's a lot of opportunities that could happen. Now, will they happen? I'm not sure, because it depends on who the lawmakers are.
And I would say social media has been out for long, starting with what was it? It wasn't Facebook. Called something else. Was it Facebook?
Yeah, it was called.
Anyway, to me, it's a day late and a dollar short. It's like trying to stop a tidal wave.
Yes.
And now is not the time to try to stop that tidal wave. This is my personal opinion.
Yes.
They should have thought about this a long time ago, because there's no regulation. And even if they try to somehow regulate children,
mm-hmm.
how in the heck are they going to enforce that?
Right.
I mean, how would you enforce something like that? And oh, by the way, I would guess that other countries are smarter than us. And they just kind of laugh at the United States and say, oh, look at those knuckleheads there. They're spending all their time looking at videos and social media.
Right.
And here we are doing science experiments and launching things and you know, becoming
and
smarter.
To have a positive impact on our community.
Exactly. Yeah. And just to be able to rise in your career and your thought processes and all that jazz. Yeah.
Decision-making processes, you know, and that's the key, you know, because the fact that if we're not developing good decision makers now, can you imagine what the future is going to be like?
I don't want to think about it.
But you and I won't be around. So Jay, let's go into some of the, you know, I talked about the psychological, but, you know, there's another side, biological, that has even a greater impact. So I'm going to let you take it from there.
So, and I have to disagree when you say greater impact. I think maybe equal impact when it comes to cosmetics and makeup and children. Because the mental part to me is just as important as the biological part, and you never know which one might be worse or better. So Pam and I talked in our previous podcast about chemicals and how things are regulated and how they're not regulated, and how there are things in our lotions and our toothpastes and our eyeshadows and all that stuff that we didn't really know was in there until we started looking at the ingredients and looking up what those ingredients were and how toxic they are. And so I pulled a couple of articles, and I'm going to do a lot of verbatim reading from these articles because they say it a lot better than I would be able to say it. But there was an article in WebMD from 2021, and the title was, "Are Harmful Chemicals Hiding in Your Cosmetics?" So they talk about the coal tar hair dyes that are used in hair colorants that can cause allergic reactions, hair loss, and injuries to the eyes. And it also mentioned, and we talked about this, it's reasonable to assume that the cosmetic products that a person uses are properly tested for safety before they land on your shopping aisles. Not so much. Right. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, does not pre-approve cosmetics or the ingredients of cosmetics unless it's a color additive. They only act when there's been a consumer complaint. And we talked about this, Pam, in our previous podcast. It's reactive, not proactive.
Right.
It's not until someone gets hurt that someone says, uh-oh, I think maybe we should look into this.
Right. Or a complaint has been filed.
Right. Exactly.
Know? Or
exactly.
A lawsuit has been filed.
Exactly. Exactly. So according to this article, it says cosmetic companies are expected to ensure that their products and their ingredients are safe before engaging in any form of marketing. So that's putting the accountability on companies to self-regulate and self-regulate. I guess that's the best way to put it. I don't have a lot of confidence in that because it's all about the money.
It's all about the money.
Right. So why would they, you know, make a big stink about something that they believe?
Why change a product when it's been selling?
Right. And so also they are expected to label their products properly, ensure that they're not using prohibited ingredients, and sticking to the agreed limits on restricted ingredients. And as we mentioned in our previous podcast, we found that's not true. There are things in ingredients that are not so good. Those forever chemicals, you remember that?
Right.
PFAS,
the fragrances.
The right,
fragrances.
The fragrance, yes. And in fact, This article talks about a 2021 study that was published that showed evidence of high concentrations of fluorine in makeup, products such as foundations, mascaras, and lip products. And fluorine, if you remember from our other podcasts, anything that has the word or the prefix F-L-O-U-R in it is a bad thing. It's bad, bad stuff. Doesn't matter what the rest of the word is. If it's got those letters in it, they're toxic or potentially toxic. And so this 2021 study that WebMD talked about showed concerns about the lack of clear labeling of ingredients with the fluorine. And according to the Personal Care Products Council, because there has to be someone who says, oh no, you don't know what you're talking about.
So there is a council.
There is a council, but they say, oh no. That's the products that have fluorine in them, that's only trace amounts. It's nothing to worry about, nothing to see here, right? Because there's going to be somebody who says, oh no, you don't know what you're talking about, scientists, right? And they say, the Personal Care Products Council say, trace amounts not intentionally added to products were not required to be listed on the label. So they're saying if it's trace amounts and they weren't added intentionally, then we don't have to list them on the labels. Well, we don't know cumulatively or with people who are maybe compromised medically, biologically, immunologically, if those trace amounts might have a bad effect on them. I mean, who knows, right?
Absolutely. Yes, you know, the thing is, you're right. You never, long-term effects, someone who's using a product consistently over time, you know, that exposure just increases every time it's used.
Right. And so the word cosmetics, according to WebMD, expands to include products such as moisturizers, shampoos, toothpaste, and deodorants, as well as hair color products, fingernail polishes, and perfumes. So with that said, and we talked about this in a previous podcast, companies don't have to disclose anything about the fragrance. So when you look on the ingredients of a product and it says fragrance, who knows what that might be?
Right.
Because they don't have to tell anybody what it is. So you are at the mercy of the company that produced that product to understand what that might be. Short-term animal studies show for some of these ingredients in these products that there's a possibility of endocrine system disruption and cancer, right? So I found another article, more recent, January 2023, the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health. I've never heard of that, but it must be a some kind of a public health entity. They had an article that said most U.S. children, and you mentioned this, most U.S. children use potentially toxic makeup products, often during play. So we're talking about those things that you talked about in the stores, in the toy aisles, right? The little lipsticks and the little rouge and the all the little creams and stuff in the shiny, sparkly packages that even you and I as a child were attracted to.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And who thought anything about, I wonder what this is.
Right. Right. What it could do,
or where did it come from? Where was it manufactured? Does it have anyway? So this study that was done by this Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health, they published in a peer-reviewed International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health the results. 200 surveys. 79% of parents in these 200 surveys said that their children 12 or younger used makeup and body products marketed to children like glitter, face paint, and lip gloss. I didn't even think about face paint or
I didn't either.
Or lip gloss or
either.
Glitter.
Go to any event, carnival, fair, some dumb birthday parties.
Exactly. And so prior research, according to them, has shown that these products often have toxic chemicals like lead, asbestos, PFAS, which are the forever chemicals, phthalates, and formaldehyde. And these chemicals, whether intentionally added or simply present as contaminants, have been linked to cancer, neurodevelopmental harm, and other serious irreversible health effects. So listeners, When we're talking about children, we're talking about not adults who have the ability to research and analyze and read labels. We're talking about the most vulnerable of our population.
That's true.
Who are using these products that have not been tested, that may not be safe, and they're being absorbed through the skin.
Absolutely.
They may be on a kid's hands, and then they're touching other parts of their bodies, or they're touching other friends.
Right.
They're not washing their hands, you know, every 5 minutes to get these things off, and they're being absorbed.
Yeah, right.
And so how eye-opening is that? And according to the study that they did of the surveyed children, about 54% of the kids at least monthly use some kind of makeup or some kind
lip gloss.
Right, lip gloss, you know, some kind of cosmetic or makeup of some sort. 12% uses those substances daily. 20% of those surveyed, those kids surveyed, use those kinds of things for 8 hours or more at a time. And one-third of them reported unintentionally ingesting the products in the last year. More than one-third of the surveyed children were Latino, and 65% of those Latino children use those kinds of products. Latino children reported using those products more often and more for play, which I thought was an interesting factoid, too.
Yes, interesting.
Right, so we're talking about skin exposure, hand-to-mouth activity, and unintentional ingestion. And oh, by the way, I know you remember this. But when we were kids and we had those wax looking Coke lips. Bottles. Well, and the wax lips too. Yeah. During Halloween with the right. wax lips and the other things, and I think there was like a whistle, some kind of a whistle too,
whistle
that was wax.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. the little bottles filled, the wax filled bottles with this,
right.
I don't know what that liquid was.
But it tastes good.
I don't even want to know what it was. But and same thing with the Lick-O-Maid and the Pixie Sticks and all those uh-huh. things. I have no idea what was in some of that stuff.
Nope.
There could have been some really terrible things in those
right.
products.
Absolutely.
Because that was
and
back
we
in the...
Know.
That was back.
And we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is, Jay. I'm just going to say this. It seems to me, and I think parents are duped as well.
I agree.
When it says kids on it, for kids, they assume that it's safe, right? That the products are safe. But
they're not regulated.
You are revealing that none of that's true.
No. And according to this article, according to this study, it's one of the quotes was, unfortunately, currently little is being done at the federal level to protect children from toxic chemicals in children's mm-hmm. makeup and body products.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking about a child and their developmental growth, that you know, whether it be brain or body or whatever, if there are chemicals in these things that they're using, and oh, by the way, listeners, when you're taking your children into makeup stores like Ulta and Sephora, and you're exposing
yes,
them to even it more adult like products that are also not regulated. Then it could be even worse. I don't know. I haven't read any studies whether it says those that are meant for adults are worse in content and ingredients than what's in the kids' stuff.
Yeah, I did come across something, Dave, interesting you mentioned that they found out that the early use of makeup interferes with the natural skin functions like sweating and maintaining healthy bacteria.
Mm.
In the body. So I did read that part.
Wow.
That came from the research.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. And so the commercials that I've seen lately where there's an adult talking about a cream for wrinkles, and then the next frame on the same commercial is this little girl who's probably 12 or 13 using wrinkle cream. I'm like, what?
Really?
What? Yeah, I'm like, but the product, by the way, is Neutrogena. I'm just going to say it.
Oh, so it's gentle enough for kids. Is that what they're saying?
I don't know. I can't. The skin in your youth is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't care what color you are.
Yeah.
The skin in your youth is so beautiful. Oh, my gosh. Do not put anything on it that is not necessary.
Absolutely.
Unless it's a rash or, you know, some kind of medical condition that needs to be addressed. Leave that beautiful skin alone and protect it with sunscreen. Don't put makeup on it. It's not, no, don't do that. That's just my personal opinion.
Yes, I agree.
So that's just my two cents. And the other articles that I read had to do with, again, the fluorinated ingredients in some of these products. And how they were, and PFAS, which are forever chemicals, which are, as Pam and I discussed in our previous podcast, some have not even been researched yet. They are evolving. It's not like there's a set group of forever chemicals and that's that. There are all kinds of variations and all kinds of chemicals that are evolving into different kinds of forever chemicals. And we don't want to be putting those on our skin, especially we don't want to be putting them on infants or children's skin. We don't need to do that, in my opinion.
Yes. And while you were talking, Jay, and listeners, I took the time to go into EWG.org to find out what the Neutrogena, what was the rating on the Neutrogena And this is the Rapid Wrinkle Repair Cream. And I'm not sure if this is it, but, and this organization, and Jay and I have talked about this organization. They actually do the testing. That cream is rated at a 9. It's highly hazardous, right? And so, one being the, you know, they have what they call EWG verified, which means that there are no disruptive chemicals in there that could, you know, that could be harmful, and 10 being the worst. And this is actually the 9. So can you imagine advertising that to a child?
But nobody's talking about it, Pam. So the EWG, listeners, if you haven't listened to our other podcast, is the Environmental Working Group, which is an entity that tests and rates different kinds of personal care products. And if you go
as
on there,
well as household products.
And household products, anything that you would be exposed to. And so they have rated certain things so that you can go in there and look things up. And you don't have to pay to do it, but they do have that information. And so it frosts my cookies that no one in the federal government has thought it's a good idea to regulate some of these products, especially for those that might be used by children. And for those listeners who are taking their children to Sephora and Ulta and Sally Beauty and all those other kinds of stores that have personal care products and cosmetics and makeup and hair dyes, please read the ingredients on what you're buying for your kid. Just be aware of what they're putting on their skin, because they are in the state of development. They're in the state of growth. Their organs are still forming. Their brain is still forming. Please don't introduce anything that's going to impact that doesn't need to be introduced. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And like we said at the beginning of this podcast, parents, we are not trying to tell you what to do, what not to do with your children. It's up to you to raise your children as you see fit. However, if you want to save your child from being exposed to low self-esteem as well as exposure to, and that's on the psychological side as well as the impact that it could have on the biological side, you know, endocrine disruptors and cancer, then we ask you to take consideration in what you do. If you love your children, or even if you don't have children and you love any child, if you have a love for any child, even if you don't have children, take the time to look, investigate, and find out for yourself. Even the products you use on your own skin, we can protect ourselves if we just take the time. So on that note, we're going to end this podcast with a quote from Kate Angel, and it says, "Outer beauty attracts, but inner beauty captivates." So as we go through this next year, let's look at our own self-esteem and our abilities and our passion and the inner light, and not just on our outward appearances.